Public Broadcasting and handle the truth. Truth.
Coming back in to the second hour, this is the Barden Report from Republic Broadcasting. P.J. Barden is my name. And today, the bulk of the program we've given over to a startling, relevant, shocking issue of the many, many issues under the heading of the subtitle of this program, Attack, Attack, Attack. Ralph Nader doing a fantastic job. And we've played two of the pieces now, relatively short. But this hour now, we're going to play a long piece. If we have one of the ad breaks, 49 minutes, we'll break at 23 minutes, and it's Ralph Nader interviewing an outstanding whistleblower, John M. Barnett, and Ken has it there, and it's ready to go now in a few seconds, okay?
It's the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
Stand up, you've been sitting way too long.
Welcome to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. My name is Steve Scrovan, along with my co-host David Feldman. How are you today, David?
Excited about today's show, of course.
And we also have the man of the hour, Ralph Nader. Hello, Ralph.
Hello, everybody.
And I'm excited about today's show, too. Last week, we had Dr. George Luber on the show. He was being honored with the Joe A. Calloway Award for Civic Courage for blowing the whistle at the Centers for Disease Control when he was ordered to tamp down his efforts to deal with the climate crisis. Well, on the show today, we're going to feature another courageous Joe A. Calloway Award winner. His name is John M. Barnett. Regular listeners to this show know the many different ways we have covered the Boeing MAX 8 story. We've talked about how mergers and management decisions have turned a once great engineering company into more of a financial company intent on jacking up its stock price, not through innovation, but through buying back its own stock. We've talked about how the Federal Aviation Commission dropped the ball and allowed Boeing to essentially regulate itself. And we've talked about how the marketeers at Boeing have continually overruled the engineers. Mr. Barnett was a quality control expert at Boeing, working not on the MAX 8, but on the 787 Dreamliner at their big production facility in South Carolina. There, he blew the whistle on shoddy engineering and a corporate culture where profits trump safety. He's got an eye-opening story to tell, and we look forward to hearing that. As always, we will take a moment after that to find out what's happening in the other dark recesses of the corporate underworld with our corporate crime reporter, Russell Mokyber. And Ralph will also answer some listener questions. But first, let's meet yet another courageous whistleblower. David?
John M. Barnett was a quality control manager at Boeing for 25 years in its Seattle facility. He transferred in 2011 to manage Boeing's new plant in South Carolina to build the 787 Dreamliner, where he revealed shoddy production, as reported on the front page of the April 20th, 2019 New York Times. He retired under pressure in 2017 and assumed the challenge to inform the flying public. His whistleblower complaint to OSHA is now pending. Welcome to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, John Barnett.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Indeed. Welcome, John Barnett. Describe the plane that you have been very concerned about, the Dreamliner, and how many of them are up in the air? When was the first one launched?
Okay, it's a 787, and the biggest concern came when they opened the Charleston plant. That's when the issues and the shoddy production work really started, and I believe our first delivery out of there was 2012.
And why did they open a plant in North Charleston, South Carolina, where there was a dearth of skilled workers, instead of expanding their facility in Seattle, where I understand the Dreamliner is also produced, in your judgment, at a much higher standard than at South Carolina? What brought them to South Carolina?
Well, I can tell you, Ralph, what the information was shared with us from Boeing was that they were trying to expand the production facilities and bring other areas into the mix. But from an internal standpoint, it was more about the union activity that was up in Washington State, and there were the battles with them and the strikes that they were causing. So they were really wanting to get to a non-unionized right-to-work state.
Did the governor of South Carolina help them do that? Nikki Haley is now on the board of the Boeing Corporation for a few meetings, earning, as other board members are, over $300,000 a year. What was, beside being a non-union state, they give them all kinds of subsidies?
Yes, sir. The information we were provided inside of Boeing as employees were that there were hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies and tax breaks and that type of thing that Boeing was offered to go to South Carolina. And part of that deal was that we hired most of the employees locally. So we were not allowed to go to areas that had high experience in aerospace and airplane building. We had to hire the local people fresh out of college.
And I remember Boeing was saying that they were going to have training facilities so to upgrade untrained workers to the very demanding tasks of assembling an aircraft. This was really not a manufacturing facility as it was an assembling one. Isn't that right, bringing various parts from around the country and the world?
Yes, sir, that's correct. The 787 is fabricated from various parts of the world, and they all come together, and the final assembly is performed in Charleston and Everett. Yes, sir.
You were a quality control inspector who received high commendations when you worked at the Seattle plant.
Yes, sir.
You volunteered to go to South Carolina. You've once said that the quality control inspectors at Boeing are the last check, the last safety check, before the plane takes off with passengers.
That's so correct. The quality control or quality personnel are last line of defense. That's correct.
Given the importance of this skill, why is it that Boeing is laying off literally hundreds of quality control people in both their Seattle plant and South Carolina? What's their reason for that?
Well, so they've been preaching for years that quality is non-value added, doesn't bring any value to the product. So they've been trying real hard to eliminate quality. And in a process of eliminating quality, what they're doing internally is they're telling inspectors not to document defects. They're telling quality folks, you know, to do a visual buy-off and not document things and just way outside the realms of how they should be building an airplane.
John, when you use the word quality, I think it's almost a term of art. You don't mean metallurgical quality or something. You're talking about quality control inspectors, aren't you?
Yes, sir, that's correct. And yeah, so within Boeing, you have what you call the quality department and you have manufacturing. And within the quality department, that's where your inspectors are, your quality managers, your quality assurance investigators. Anything having to do with quality of the product is under the quality organization.
So why would they want to eliminate that critical role? Because they know if a plane goes down because of Boeing's neglect or negligence, it can be all hell for Boeing to pay. Look what happened after the two MAX crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia and on other crashes in the past. I mean, how can they dare take a risk like that? Who's going to replace several hundred Boeing quality control inspectors in Seattle and in South Carolina?
So what their plan is, what they call a MFPP, it's a multifunction process or production process. And basically what it allows it to do is it's a mechanic to buy off his buddy's work. So mechanics are buying off each other's work, saying that it's good to go.
We're talking with John Barnett, former quality control inspector for the Boeing Corporation on the Boeing 787 Dreamliner. John, aren't they also arguing that automation is better, more reliable than human quality control inspectors? I heard that reported in the press.
Yes, that is correct. However, there's very limited on what can actually be implemented within the aircraft program. We've had several what I'd call false starts with the technology where there's, you know, they're promising that it's bigger, better, and badder than any inspector. Will they go to implement it? And it isn't. So there's a lot of trial and error, and there's a lot of discussion before they've actually implemented things and proven them out.
Well, your experience, which we'll get to in a moment, the shoddy situation going on in the North Charleston plant in South Carolina, was so detailed that you were a main source for the New York Times Sunday page one expose of what was going on down there with the Dreamliner and the sloppiness, carelessness in the Charleston, North Carolina plant. So yeah. Would you run us through how it all started? I mean, you were one of numerous quality control inspectors, and some of them have followed your courage after you took the first step. But what is it about the other quality control inspectors when they see the same things you see, but they don't protest, they don't write it up?
Well, and that goes back to the inexperience of the workforce. The people that's been hired in Charleston are brand new to Boeing, so they're basically doing what they're told. They're not experienced and knowledgeable enough to know when to push back and when it's not right. They're just doing what's told and following direction. And the management there is just laying pressure on them big time to get the planes out the door, regardless of the condition, just to get them delivered and make the cash register ring.
What fascinated me when I read the New York Times article is the sloppiness on a plane that sells for how much? How much does one Dreamliner sell for?
Well, they're advertised, they're listed for $150 million. They actually sell for about $150
million. $150
million? Yes, sir.
And they're leaving all kinds of junk on the plane after they've finished assembling it. Why don't you describe how you started seeing things you couldn't believe compared to the higher standards you left in the Seattle Dreamliner plant?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Why don't you give us that narrative?
Okay. So just a real quick background. It's been 25 years in Everett, Washington, working on 747, 777, 787 when it first started up there. And the culture in Everett, and actually Washington State, you know, you got to think back, there's several generations of employees that have been building airplanes. So you have the generational knowledge transfer of how to build airplanes. And the culture up there and the general population understands the criticality of following processes and procedures and making sure the airplane's built correctly. Whereas you do not have that in Charleston. They don't understand the ramifications of what a defect could cause, because they don't have that experience. And what we found in Charleston, or what I've noticed in Charleston, is there's a lot more pressure on mechanics to just buy off their jobs and get them sold. I mean, they're measured almost by the hour, and they're measured by how many, like we call them beans, you know, a job when they go to complete a job and get inspected by an inspector and bought off, we call that a bean. So they're all about bean counts, you know, how many jobs they can get done in a day, not necessarily if it's done correctly. And the pressure from management is just get the airplanes out. And another part of the Charleston culture that I've noticed is that the leadership here seems to be more interested in self-promotions instead of making sure the product is built correctly, if that makes sense. So it's more focused on themselves and how a decision might affect their career versus how it's going to affect the airplane. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So what did you start to discover?
So I think they're really making some poor decisions. And when I first moved down to Charleston, I was the first quality manager hired to set up Charleston plant. And we had developed training plans and from the quality perspective of how to look up procedures, how to follow drawings, how to do your job. And we were pretty much shut down. None of the mechanics went through our training. Very few of our inspectors had to go through it. Manufacturing had set up a training program for their mechanics, and it was mandatory for our inspectors to go through their training. So I sent my inspectors through it, and they came back and said, the only thing they're teaching them is how to roller stamp paperwork. They're not teaching them how to build an airplane. They're not teaching them how to follow processes, just how to close out jobs. So that's kind of where it started, was right when Charleston first opened up. And just over the years, it just got worse and worse as far as bypassing procedures, not documenting defects, not maintaining configuration control of the airplane. And towards the end of my time at Boeing, the issues that I discovered was we had hundreds of defective parts. And what a defective part is something that does not meet engineering or quality requirements and should not be used on an airplane. So we had hundreds upon hundreds of missing non-conforming parts that they didn't know where they went. So I wanted to make sure that we track these parts down, trace them down, figure out where they went. And if they've been installed on airplanes, we need to get them corrected. My management shut me down. They basically what we call pencil whip. So when you have a job that you have to perform at Boeing, it's a work order and it's got steps. And each step has a specific instruction of what you need to do or how you need to install a part in the airplane. Well, rather than mechanics actually installing the parts and inspectors verifying it, they just sit at their desk and roller stamp things. And we find parts all over the place that the paperwork says it's been installed, but the part's sitting over on the shelf.
Good heavens. You know, I can see passengers listening to this and saying, yuck, what is going on here? This is a $150 million plane, and they're engaged in sloppy pencil whipping, as you say. We're talking with John M. Barnett, who is described by the Callaway Award for Civic Courage as, quote, a defiant trustee for airline passenger and crew safety, as veteran quality control manager for the Boeing Corporation on the Boeing 747, 767, 777, and 787 programs. And you have been quoted as saying, quote, I haven't seen a plane out of Charleston yet that I put my name on saying it's safe and airworthy, end quote. Well, have any of these planes crashed due to the sloppiness and the misplaced parts at the Charleston plant?
No, sir, they have not as of yet. But let me throw in a caveat that in production, in aircraft production, and working with Boeing all these years, we have a rule of thumb that it takes 8 to 10 years for a defect to become an issue on an airplane. So, you know, if you look at the 8 to 10 year time frame before a defect becomes an issue, and our first plane was delivered in 2012, you know, we're starting to get into that 8 to 10 year window. So you're correct. We have not lost any 787s to date, and thank God, and I hope that continues. I'm just really concerned that the way they were produced and delivered, that is not going to be the case in the future.
Well, when Boeing's managers and higher-ups saw your write-ups, your documented write-ups on misplaced parts, missing parts, parts in the wrong place, shavings here and there, did they move to correct it? And what are they doing if these planes are already up in the air? Are they thinking about sending bulletins to the airlines, apart from what they did to you, which we'll get to? What are they doing for that? I mean, who's in charge here? Doesn't all this come down from top management?
Yes, sir, it does. It comes from the top down. But in Charleston, you're right, you know, that it's more about profits over safety and quality. You know, and like I say, they're really putting the pressure on the mechanics just to close things out and quality, not document defects. And it's an ongoing thing, and you hear about the titanium slivers that's all in the flight control wires and the electronic equipment and that type of thing. You know, that's a major issue. And when I brought it up, I insisted that the airplanes be cleaned, and I told my boss flat out, I refuse to buy off on this airplane as is. I was transferred to a different location. He brought in another way less inexperienced quality manager than myself. And the leadership there decided that they weren't going to take the time to clean the airplanes. They're going to deliver them. And they've delivered. I filed my complaint in January of 2017 with the FAA. Since then, the FAA has gone in and did a spot check. And they inspected 5 airplanes in Charleston. And they found these metal shavings on all 10 airplanes, both locations. And what they did was they issued a DAI, a designated airworthy inspection requirement, to Boeing. And what that DAI does is within the internal workings of Boeing, it tells them that they have to clean these planes before they can deliver them. But where they came up short, and I don't know if you caught it on the response that they did to the New York Times story, that the FAA came back and said Boeing decided that those slivers weren't a safety of flight issue. And I don't understand how electronic equipment full of slivers, metal titanium slivers, all over the flight control wires, the electronic equipment, the power panels that actually run the full power of the airplane. I don't see how that cannot be a safety of flight issue with metal shavings in there.
Well, tell us how many of these Dreamliners are up and what routes do they usually fly?
So I'm not sure what the count is up to now. I know when I left, we were up over 800 airplanes that had already been delivered. And they typically fly overseas, so they fly over the oceans and, you know, the long routes to other countries.
And how many pilots?
Two, I believe. I believe it takes two to fly the 787.
And were there any counterfeit parts, which are not Boeing's fault? They don't counterfeit parts, but there are reports over the years of counterfeit parts, for example, coming from East Asia, very, very facsimile similar. Were there any counterfeit parts that you discovered?
So actually, I was part of that back before when all this came up. I was actually working receiving inspection at the time when all the counterfeit part issue came up. And we put very specific safety catches in place to make sure that incoming parts were not counterfeit. Again, in Charleston, they've eliminated those. So we don't know for sure if there's counterfeit parts coming in or not, to be honest with you. They've bypassed those safety or those quality checkpoints.
Why weren't there FAA inspectors at the scene? This plant has 7,000 employees in North Charleston, South Carolina.
Right.
I mean, why was it just left up to you and others to make these discoveries? I think people think the FAA is the watchdog here.
Well, and that's another issue that really needs to be addressed, Ralph, because, you know, I've been working for Boeing for 32 years, and over the years, I've seen the FAA backing off on their oversight, and they've become more of a partnership than an oversight. And the FAA representatives there at Charleston, I actually worked real close with them. They were afraid of Boeing to find too many issues because they would be transferred or kicked out of the Charleston plant. So there was a very intimidation factor from Boeing to the FAA representatives at Charleston. They were afraid to make too many waves.
Like federal poultry and meat inspectors, that's the same problem they've had when they try to be conscientious and do their job for the consumer. I want to ask you, when these charges come out from you, and after you set the standard of speaking out, I understand that there were other whistleblowing safety complaints filed with federal regulators by Boeing workers. Does Boeing ever feel obliged to respond to these publicly?
Well, Ralph, their response is spun. You know, I mean, they have what they call spin doctors. You know, they'll spin it to, we call it the Boeing switch. So if an employee raises a concern, you know, saying, as an example, if I raised a concern saying that people aren't buying off their job or are not documenting defects, well, then Boeing turns it around and accuses me of not documenting defects. So the person that's complaining, they turn it around and point at them and say they're the ones doing it wrong. So that's a big problem. So no, they're not willing to have a face-to-face discussion and discuss it. It's just try to cover up, make it go away, and make the whistleblowers look bad, you know?
John, do you ever find engineering professors who don't have to worry about Boeing paying them a salary supporting you? Do you ever find anybody outside Boeing in the engineering and inspection profession taking a stand on your behalf?
Not personally, other than my legal counsel, which is excellent, but not really. I know that after the New York Times came out, I think it was CNN had some specialists on there, and they supported what I was saying, that, you know, the metal slivers could be catastrophic, and, you know, we haven't gotten into the oxygen systems where the emergency oxygen for passengers in a decompression event. I discovered that 25% of them do not work on the 787s.
Why don't you repeat that? Because people are told all the time when the oxygen drops, you know, put it on you, you know, every time you take a flight.
Put it on, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So what you're saying is a quarter of them didn't work?
That's correct. Yes, sir. A team and myself put together a control sample of over 300 of them. And out of those, 75 of them did not operate as required. They did not release the oxygen. I elevated this to my management. Again, I was removed from the investigation.
Okay. We're just going to take a break now, I think. And we'll be back with Ralph Nader and John Burnett. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. You can take a break now. And we'll then run straight through on the rest of it. Is that okay? Okay. It's coming up now in 3 minutes, okay?
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Coming back in with Akravelka and Only You, but this is devastating stuff, absolutely devastating. And Nader is really low key, but even he's shocked at some of the revelations here. But I'll save the comments for after myself and Dave kind of talked about this on the third hour. But anyway, we go back to John M. Barnett and Ralph Nader describing the horror story that is the Dreamliner manufacturing plant in South Carolina. Okay, we'll go back to that now.
And they turned it over to a 2-year employee within Boeing, and they didn't do anything with it.
What'd they do with the 800 Dreamliners that have these oxygen units?
They have done nothing to correct it. They've done nothing to identify root cause. They have done nothing to correct the issue, Ralph.
And no airworthiness directive from the FAA and no Boeing warning bulletin to their customers, the airlines?
That's correct, yes.
Now, tell us if you think there's an increasing danger in air safety from over-automation, from automating your type of job all the way to the kind of automation that increased the likelihood that those Boeing MAXs would crash, the so-called software fix that took control of the plane away from the pilots. Some specialist I talked to called it the silent hijacker and pushed the planes down with 340 human beings into the Java Sea and an Ethiopian farm area. Give us your take on this drive for automation, which is, of course, to cut costs and increase Boeing's bottom line, even though, and this was not brought out by the congressional hearing, John, Boeing has spent over $40 billion with a B dollars on stock buybacks to raise its stock, to increase the stock options of the compensation of Boeing's bosses. And as people are getting to know, stock buybacks don't create a single job. They don't build a single product. They're just there to increase the metrics for executive compensation. So here's Boeing cutting corners that affect the lives of people in the future in these planes, and they're in effect burning tens of billions of dollars in stock buybacks.
Yes, sir. That's inconceivable to me. I can't wrap my head around it, because Boeing's number one priority should be the safety of the flying public. And the last 6 years that I worked with them, that is the last thing on their mind, is the safety of the flying public, because it's just about kicking airplanes out and making a cash register.
Well, they claim they've had a great safety record and automation will make it safety. Plus, your response.
So going back to my comment earlier, the rule of thumb in aircraft production is it takes 8 to 10 years for a defect to manifest into an issue. So if you look at the last 20 years, that safety record that Boeing is touting right now is built on the past quality of 747, 767, 777s. So the 787 has not been in service long enough to meet the quality level, or to prove that they're at the quality level that the other programs are at. So that's what Boeing is saying, that they're at the highest quality level, or they've had an excellent safety record. But again, we're just now getting into that 8 to 10 year window. So
you're pointing out something that needs elaboration. A lot of people have said that after the McDonnell Douglas merger with Boeing, where the McDonnell Douglas culture took over Boeing, Boeing moved from a prime engineering high reputation firm to a financial get the stock up, stock option bonus firm, and degraded its engineering priorities. In fact, someone said about the MAX that the Boeing marketeers overruled the Boeing engineers. In your career, did you see that change firsthand?
Yes, sir, I did, unfortunately. It was probably about 6 months or 9 months after the merger between Boeing and McDonnell Douglas, and we, within Boeing on the production floor, had a little, I guess you'd call it a little funny or a little joke that said, you know, Boeing didn't buy McDonnell Douglas. McDonnell Douglas bought Boeing with its own money. And what I saw was when the merger happened, they brought in the McDonnell Douglas leadership to take over the Boeing company, and it was like a light switch. It went from quality to all about shareholder value. It was just amazing. Looking back, it just is so clear that the direction of the company made a 180 turn at that point in time.
Well, how, as we conclude, I want to get Steve and David in on this, but how are you holding up professionally and personally? I mean, they forced you into retirement.
Yes, sir, they did. I'm not going to lie. It's been rough on me. It's been rough on my family. I'm still dealing with issues. I'm still having anxiety attacks, PTSD. But, you know, it's been very rough. It's taken a serious mental and emotional toll on me. But, you know, I want to try very hard to keep the focus on the safety of the airplane. You know, I mean, that's what my story is about, is telling my story enough to where the right people get involved to make sure that these airplanes are made correctly. Because the 787 carries 288 passengers plus crew. So the last thing I want to do is wake up in the morning and see a 787 that's gone down because, you know, titanium slivers caught fire at 40,000 feet or a defective part broke loose because it wasn't built correctly or, you know, they had a decompression event and people weren't able to get emergency oxygen. I mean, it's just, it keeps me up at night, Ralph. I can't sleep. You know, it's taken a heck of a toll on me.
And for this level of professional concern, you got Boeing's trying to break you, discredit
you, sir.
Defame you, and probably blackball you from any future employment opportunities, should you seek them.
Yes, sir. Actually, that's already happened. I've been blocked. I was blacklisted. I was blocked from two different positions that I'm aware of that I can prove. There was probably others that I can't prove. And that's another thing, you know, when you're dealing with Boeing, you have to have it in documentation, you know, because otherwise it's your word against theirs and they're going to win every time. But I was able to keep my documentation.
You know, I noticed that at the congressional hearings in the past few days, you know, the Boeing CEO, Mullenberger, was very contrite and humble, and he paid compassionate attention to the families, holding up the pictures of their deceased relatives. But he knew, and the Boeing lobbyists behind him in the chairs knew, that they own the Congress. They give money to over 300 members of Congress. They're saying to Congress, where else is anybody going to go? You know, we're Boeing and Airbus, and you're not going to go after the only domestic manufacturer of big-body passenger jets. And it's really sickening to watch because the questions coming in are tough within a narrow framework. They don't go into the fundamental design, although Congressman Steve Cohen from Tennessee laid out how much Mullenberg was being paid and asked him why he didn't get a pay cut. He was being paid $30 million even after the crashes, and he didn't ask for a pay cut. And he replied to Congressman Cohen, well, it's up to the board of directors. Well, he's chairman of the board of directors. I calculated in the 3 hours I was sitting there listening to him, he made $45,000.
Wow.
In those 3 hours.
Unbelievable.
So we're dealing with corporate emperors who put on a show for the members of Congress, and they're humble, and they always address them as congressmen and congresswomen.
Right.
They know who's in charge. And by trying to break you, they're trying to make you an example to anyone else at the Charleston plant. Well, look what happened to John Barnett. You better shut up. But I'll tell you, if Boeing has to experience one or two more crashes due to Boeing faulty inspection or Boeing negligent design, it's going to break Boeing because it's no longer just two major companies, Airbus and Boeing, dominating the world. You've got now the Chinese, Brazilian, Japanese about ready to offer competitive large-size passenger planes, number one. And number two, you may not know this, John, but in the 1950s, the British aerospace industry was one of the leaders in the world, and they produced a plane called the Comet Jet, and three of them crashed.
Yes, sir.
And that was the end of the British aerospace industry leadership in the world. So beware, Boeing, the board of directors of Boeing and the CEO digging in their heels on this Dreamliner mess and the disasters with the MAX have now a career conflict of interest with the future well-being of Boeing and its workers, which is why the families have demanded that there be a mass resignation, as would have happened, by the way, in Japan right away.
They would have bowed. Absolutely.
Yeah, they would have bowed and resigned. David, Steve, any final comments or questions?
If I could just touch on one thing, about the congressional hearing, and unfortunately I'm in the process of moving, but and I was able to get bits and pieces of it. And I guess my put is, you know, I'd love to sit down with the CEO and the decision makers at Boeing and let them take my concerns seriously and let's have a one-on-one discussion. I don't have a problem talking to any of them.
John, we're demanding that the committees have technical specialists testify after Boeing and not let Boeing get away with its stonewalling.
That's excellent. That's an excellent plan. Yes, sir.
And you will testify, I assume.
Absolutely. But one of the things I've noticed Dennis Muilenburg keep saying over and over is, you know, safety and quality is top priority. Well, as a quality manager, I have a I don't know if you're familiar with performance management reviews, but it's a yearly review where you sit down with your boss and they review your work over the year and they grade you on how well you did. And based on those reviews, it defines your future raises, your bonuses, your ability to participate in special leadership programs, that type of thing. During my performance review as a quality manager, I was penalized and basically received no raises. And he actually put this in writing that I needed to learn to work in the gray areas of the procedures, that I was knowledgeable almost to a fault, that I needed to stop documenting quality issues and defects in email, you know. So I guess my question to Dennis is, you know, you're sitting up here saying that safety and quality is top priority, but yet you have quality managers within your organization that are being penalized for following processes. So how does that make it top priority?
Which is exactly why you should testify before Congress.
I'm willing anytime, Ralph. I mean, like I say, they've done their damage to me. You know, I was forced to retire, you know, and I will deal with what's ahead of me, but it really needs to be brought to light before we start losing the airplanes.
Steve,
and that's
David.
My top concern is the safety of the flying public. As a quality manager, that's what I swore to protect, and that's I'm going to do everything I can to.
And you put your entire career on the line.
Yes, sir, I did. I was put in a position to where I had to choose between the company I love and the job I love and my career versus the safety of the flying public. And I had to sacrifice those to protect the flying public, or at least try to.
Beautifully said. Steve and David?
Well, I certainly don't know how to top that. I'm kind of speechless, sir, at your courage and completely appalled at the arrogance of Boeing. And boy, it just makes you want to have that whole company just crash.
There's some serious reckoning that needs to happen in there, you know, as far as following procedures and building the airplane correctly. It's for sure something needs to change before it's too late.
And you know, Boeing is in trouble with their defense contracts, with NASA contracts. The contractors in NASA and Boeing in the Pentagon are fed up, you know. They've often suspended the contracts, they've berated Boeing. So Boeing has a multifaceted management problem of great serious proportion.
Yes, sir. You're correct. And I'm sure y'all heard about the KC-46 the Air Force refused to take because they were finding so much FOD and debris. You know, that was just recently.
That's right.
Where are the pilots association, the stewardesses and all this?
Well, see, that's the thing, is all of this is internal to Boeing. So as an example, the slivers that I found in the 25% failure rate of the emergency oxygen system, Boeing does not notify the customers that that's an issue. So they keep it under wraps internal to Boeing and try to cover it up or, you know, make it go away. So the pilots, the stewardesses, the customers don't know any of that.
Well, we're out of time, John M. Barnett, and congratulations on your Joe A. Calloway Award for Civic Courage. I'm sure you'll get other awards, too. We hope to see you before Congress to react to Boeing's testimony, and full speed ahead for you in the coming months and years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nader, and it's a pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to meeting you very soon.
Certainly.
We have been speaking with John M. Barnett, whistleblower and winner of the Joe A. Calloway Award for Civic Courage. For more about his story, go to RalphNaderRadioHour.com. Right now, we're going to take a short break and check in with our relentless corporate crime reporter, Russell Mokyber. When we come back, Ralph has his own update about Boeing, and we'll answer more of your questions. You're listening to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Back after this.
From the National Press Building in Washington, D.C., this is your Corporate Crime Reporter Morning Minute for Friday, November 15, 2019. I'm Russell Mokhiber. A Massachusetts Buffalo Wild Wings is under investigation after a chemical mixture inside the kitchen killed one employee and left at least 10 staff members and customers hospitalized. According to Boston's WHDH-TV, the fire department responded to the restaurant chain in the town of Burlington, Massachusetts, just after 5:30 p.m. A team of firefighters wearing hazmat suits found a male worker suffering from nausea. The fire chief said at a news conference that the man had been exposed to the chemical, which was being used to clean the floor, after another individual mixed it and became ill. The man was rushed to a hospital where he later died. Authorities said that at the time he inhaled the fumes, he was trying to save others from the chemical. For the Corporate Crime Reporter, I'm Russell Mokhiber.
Thank you, Russell. We're going to take your listener questions, but first, Ralph, you have some update on the Boeing MAX 8 situation. Why don't you tell our listeners what's going on there?
Well, Boeing, the FAA, and their friends in Congress are racing to unground these 737-800 MAX by January or February. Now, there aren't that many of them. There'll be in the U.S. about 70, 80 of them immediately, and you should not fly them. And when you make a reservation, just ask the operator, what's the equipment? That's the technical term. And if they say it's a 737-800 MAX, say, I'd like to fly in another airline. And the airlines are willing to go along with this for the time being without charging you a reservation fee change like Delta does, $200. The second point I want to make is that it's really pretty insidious what's going on. Boeing is known from the beginning. It has the country by the throat. It's the only domestic manufacturer of all these big passenger jets. It gives money to over 300 members of Congress, campaign cash, and it knows how to throw its influence around and to turn the FAA into putty instead of a regulator. And so when David Calhoun, who's the chairman of the board of Boeing, he's been on the board since 2009, he has a full-time job with the Blackstone financial giant, says on CNBC a few days ago, quote, from the vantage point of our board, Dennis Muhlenberg has done everything right. Remember, Dennis didn't create this problem. From the beginning, he knew that MCAS, that's the software fix so-called, that boomeranged and led to two disastrous Boeing 737 MAX crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia with 346 fatalities. He says, from the beginning, he knew the MCAS could and should have been done better, and he's led a program to rewrite MCAS to alleviate all these conditions that ultimately beset two unfortunate crews and the families and the victims, end quote. That's completely false. Dennis Muhlenberg was in on this problem from the beginning. He represented the Boeing marketeers, overruling the Boeing engineers to get the MAX up as fast as possible to compete with Airbus's 320neo. He's been CEO well before the Boeing MAX took off. He was in at the founding. And for his rubber stamp, David Calhoun, the chairman of the board of directors, to say he didn't create the problem is totally false. But you see, that's what's going on. The fix is in. The Congress is not going to do much. They have resisted our demands that they have a panel for the consumer groups like FlyersRights.org. You should go to it for updates. And Consumers Union and people like myself who's written on aviation safety. They haven't announced a hearing on that. They haven't announced a hearing for the second round for the labor unions who have to deal with these planes every day. They haven't announced, most crucially, a hearing for the technical critics, the aerospace experts, the avionics, the aerodynamic experts who are beseeching to testify and take apart Boeing's nonsense before the congressional committees. And they haven't allowed the families, who are now very, very knowledgeable about what's going on. They've met with all kinds of technicians, the FAA, the National Transportation Safety Board. They haven't been scheduled for a hearing either in the House under Congressman DeFazio from Oregon or in the Senate, Senator Wicker from Mississippi. So, folks, it's going to be a very touch-and-go situation in the next few weeks until the early part of 2020 weigh in on your member of Congress. They can say, slow down, Boeing. Don't you dare certify FAA. And we'll have more time to get this thing in better shape. FlyersRights.org is your update for any questions you may have.
Well, I have a question, Ralph. Were you at the hearing where Muhlenberg apologized to the families a few weeks ago?
Yes, I was at the hearing. Muhlenberg apologized more than once. He was told by my niece, Nadia Milleron, after the hearing, that when he apologizes, he should look the families in the eye and not do it when he's looking straight ahead at the members of the House committee, at which point he did that. He did that again. But he was raked over the coals because he was slated for a bonus of $15 million. Can you imagine? Mm. And he's dropped that. He's no longer taking that. And he's now making $23 million a year. And he was taken to task by some members of the House committee on that. But what they didn't do is break it down. At the end of the hearing, they said, Mr. Muhlenberg, you have now made $75,000 since you walked in this room at 9:30 and left at 3:30.
So in spite of all of that, your feeling is that Congress will ultimately not call them to task in a serious way.
Unless there's a new surge of air traveler demands, because they are afraid that the air travelers will start gumming up the works by saying we're not going to fly the MAX. The airlines will be perplexed on how to handle this. The Boeing MAX brand will be seriously tarnished. And so what they're worried about are the air travelers and the labor unions, and above all, the families of the bereaved who are really, really organized and are getting all kinds of access to the FAA, to the Department of Transportation, to the House, to the Senate. And they even spent a couple hours with Dennis Muhlenberg, the CEO of Boeing. So if all these things come together, what will we get? We will get the publicity of the way Boeing is supposedly going to fix this plane that they've sent in secret to the FAA. We'll get that out in the open. We'll let the technical critics go over it, have a 60-day comment period, and then we'll see where we're at. And at the same time, Congress should have the hearings I just mentioned with the labor unions, the families, the consumer groups, and the aerospace experts, some of whom worked for Boeing, others are subject matter specialists. And do they have a story to tell?
So, Ralph, in one kind of simple sentence, what is your demand? Or what are the demands of the family here that they want from Boeing? Do they want it completely grounded, build a new plane?
Well, they say the Boeing 737-800 MAX is a new plane. It should have been subject to a full certification. That's what they're demanding. That would include analyzing the aerodynamic instability problem as well as the faulty, complicated software fix they call the MCAS. Full certification, and if the plane is ever slated to be ungrounded, full simulator training, as Senator Captain Sullenberger testified for the House in June, should be required of the pilots by the airlines and Boeings. Full certification, full simulator training before that plane is up.
In your opinion, knowing a lot about avionics, do you think this plane would pass the certification?
Well, it depends on how stringent the FAA is. They can pass anything. They've been pretty permissive with Boeing.
Because they allowed Boeing to basically certify it themselves.
That's right. And they weren't up to date on the software fix. They weren't even informed by Boeing that the software strength was increased fourfold. And Boeing didn't even notify the airlines or the pilots that this stealth hijacker, this software, could take the control of the plane away from the pilots and nosedive it into the Java Sea or into a farmer's area in Ethiopia at 550 miles per hour, killing 346 people.
Now, does the FAA have the expertise and the staff to be able to do this? Because I thought that was the excuse before, and that's why they allowed Boeing to do it.
Yes, they didn't have adequate staff, but they have adequate resources to hire consultants and people who can immediately come to grips with this even more profoundly than what FAA staff can do.
You would think they could have maybe an independent blue ribbon panel like what happened after the Challenger disaster, the space shuttle disaster.
Well, they've had these panels, Steve, but the problem is they're all looking backward properly as to what happened, who knew what, when, who covered up, who didn't inform, who didn't respond. Now the panels have to address the question, should this plane ever fly again? And if it does, under what conditions? And that looking forward panels have not been brought together because they don't want to experience the conclusion of some of the findings, which is that unless that airframe and the injured overload problem that leads to the prone to stall inclination by the 737 MAX is addressed, the plane should never fly, and they're not willing to burden Boeing with that kind of economic price. So it all comes down to Boeing cash, Boeing profits.
And for the victims to be satisfied, it's going to take a movement and publicity and flyers knowing about these problems and potentially not flying on this plane for them to get their attention.
Okay, very good. Okay, we can go to the break, Ken, if you want. And we don't need it. The last 5 minutes. We'll start at the top of the hour. But wow, we're running out of wows. How much scandal can people cope with? I was just writing all the notes on that. Boeing rotten to the core, the FAA rotten to the core, and Congress rotten to the core. Where do you go to this? Well, you go to the courts and get the judges to find out that they're bought and paid for as well. It's quite shocking. Unbelievable. Okay. Okay, we'll 56-4. Okay. That's Ken telling me where we are. But, wow, what a mighty man, that very well-focused man, John Radcliffe, was named down here so many times. But a very, very courageous man, and they forced him out because he was telling the truth. And this 25% of the oxygen mass not working. Oh, my God. And two-year experience, quality control people put in instead of this very 27-year veteran of quality control. But wow. But this affects everybody, every class of person who flies. This affects them. But at least this man will get great support for telling the truth because he's saving people's lives. John M. Barnett, don't forget the name. So many things written down here, but John M. Barnett, quality control manager in Boeing. And then they build this plant in South Carolina purposely to run crap parts through the plant and to run inexperienced people. And it's basically run, that you can see what he's saying is, using very polite language, the Boeing operation run with threats, intimidation, and blackmail, because that's what their staff were doing. He was blackmailed out of his job. And there you are. But anyway, we go to this break, and in the final third hour, myself and Dave, Crucial Nonsense, very good technical man, will discuss what we've been listening to. Okay.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention.
Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcast.